You're listening to the Barry Egan Tapes on News Talk. I'm Barry Egan from the Sunday Independent, and I'm talking with Majella O'Donnell. Majella, Merry Christmas. Thanks for coming in.
You're very welcome, Barry. Merry Christmas to
you've
you too.
You've flown up from Donegal.
Flown down.
Oh, sorry, down from Donegal.
Yeah, we say down, yeah. I have, yeah.
Not Donegal, but Thurles. You were born there in 1960. What was Thurles like in the 60s?
Oh, it was brilliant. It was a great town. It was the great community. You knew absolutely everybody. You couldn't walk down the street without, you know, saying, well, is what we used to say. Well, how are you? And we knew everybody. And it was a very safe town. And, you know, we played outside all the time in trees and, you know, the streets or whatever. It was great. It was a great childhood.
It was a happy childhood.
Absolutely, it was, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And we were 15 or 16 when you played Mary Magdalene in Jesus Christ Superstar. What drew you to that role?
Well, I suppose I got asked would I do it because I'd done a couple of musicals in school. I'd done Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and I was Joseph because obviously there was no boys. And the musical society knew that I'd done that in the school, and they asked would I audition for Mary Magdalene. So I did, and I got the part.
And not long after you moved to London, you met a boy and moved to London.
I did. I met a boy in Thurles, and then when I finished school, I was 17, so I decided I would traipse after him, you know. And there all the story of all the traipsing after men began.
And why did you traipse after him? Because you fell in
love? Well, I suppose I wanted to go to London because I wanted freedom. I wanted...
Your father quite was quite controlling, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, quite a strict upbringing. And yeah, I just wanted to... I had friends over there and just the idea of it, you know, London, 1977. It was wow, you know. So... Yep, I was over there in a flash. And
the relationship didn't work out?
Didn't work out, yeah, exactly.
Why didn't it work out?
Because when I got there, he'd actually started seeing somebody else. And, of course, I got devastated. I think that might have been the first time I experienced depression.
Because when you, what age were you, 19?
Bit younger, so 18, yeah, say.
And when you got married, the night before your wedding, your husband slept with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find out?
Oh, I didn't find out till I was having going through the annulment at the church. The best man was interviewed and my parents were interviewed, his parents were interviewed.
But did you have an idea? Well, obviously...
No, I didn't. Not about that. Because the best man said that the reason he was said it was because he was telling Raymond not to marry me. You know, you're sleeping with such and don't get married. And he said, oh, sure, listen, don't worry about it. It doesn't work out. I'll divorce her. So it wasn't until then that I figured out he'd slept with somebody the night before the wedding. But then it was 4 years we were married and I thought I was the luckiest girl in the world. And then I figured that he'd had other affairs as well. So it started to all go downhill from then on.
And why do you think you were drawn to the wrong men, if I can call them that? Was it a reaction against
your father?
I suppose
I was just drawn to any man that showed interest in me because I was so... I had such a lack of confidence, of self-respect, of self-love that I just, anybody that showed any interest in me, it was like, hang on to them for dear life, you know.
Where did that lack of self-love come from?
Probably my father, you know, who was quite a difficult man to please and to, you know, make an impression on. You always trying to please him. I felt like I could never do anything right. Everything just wasn't quite good enough, you know. Even if I can remember talking about Mary Magdalene when I did that, you know, we had 6 nights, I think, in the premier hall in Thurles, and it was a big deal, like, in the town. And on the last night, I got a big bouquet of flowers and everybody was clapping and saying, you know, fantastic, great voice. And my father had come, which completely blew my mind because I just didn't think he would even. But he came on the last night and when I went down to them afterwards, you know, the first thing he said to me was, your diction could have been better.
God.
And so it was that kind of... But now I understand all he was trying to do was make me better. He was trying to, you know, point out things that where I could improve. But the problem was he never said when you got it right. It was always what more you could do. So yes, I suppose then... As I said, I would just go for guys that showed interest in me instead of looking at them and thinking, well, are they good people? Didn't matter. Yeah. If they liked me, that was good enough for me.
But during that marriage, was it when your second child arrived, you things started to unravel for you?
Yeah, well, the second, my son was about 9 months, and somebody said to me that my husband was having an affair. They'd seen him with somebody. And so then the suspicion started, and the, you know, trying to figure out who it was. And I was like a little Inspector Poirot myself, going around, you know, trying to find out if he was or he wasn't. And then when I did eventually find out, I was working in the hotel business at the time, and I told my boss, who was also my husband's boss, that the marriage was, you know, something was wrong and I didn't know what it was. I'd asked him if he was, there was somebody else, and he, no. I said, it's just falling apart and I don't know why. And then he said to me, well, I can tell you why. He said he is seeing somebody else because he asked me for a room in a hotel. So I saw who it was and I knew her. And then, as I said, my son was about 6-7 months old.
What age were you then?
I was 30.
So you were living, you had two kids, you were living in Scotland. And there was one afternoon you rang social services because you were depressed and you felt you couldn't cope, and you locked yourself in the bathroom.
Yeah, locked myself in the bathroom. And I had Michael in my arms. He was only, as I say, 6 or 7 months old. I don't know that I knew at this stage what was going on, but I was, you know, my ex-husband played with my mind. You know, he really messed with my brain. And I just knew, I thought there was something wrong with me, that I was blaming him for having an affair. And he was telling me that he, you know, wasn't, and swearing on the kids' lives and, you know, looking in my eyes and hand on the heart. No, I swear to you, I'm not having an affair. So I thought, shit, it's me. I'm going crazy. You know, I'm imagining things. And so the whole thing, and there was probably a bit of postnatal depression in there as well. And so I just went into the bathroom one day, and Siobhan was banging on the door, mom, 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 you know. And it was all, I just felt like people were clawing at me, and, you know, even her and three. And I just thought, jeez, I can't do this.
What did social services say to you?
So what they did was, somebody came around and they spoke to me, and then they agreed to take Siobhan from 9 to 5.
If only they could take your husband from 9 to 5, it would have been better.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they took her from 9 to 5 for about 2 or 3 months, I think.
And did that help you cope?
Oh yeah, it did, because I could just concentrate then, and Michael wasn't demanding at that age. You know yourself the difference between a 4-year-old and a 10-month-old. You know, she would push you and push you, and I knew myself that I was too vulnerable, volatile, that she, you know, I was afraid that, Jesus, you know, I would hate to lash out or anything like that. So I just knew myself. But they were great. They just, as I said, it wasn't like they were taken into care and I never saw them.
When did you realise that you were suffering from some form of depression?
Not until I was in my mid-30s, 37, 36.
You told Gay Byrne on The Meaning of Life that depression is like being at the bottom of a very deep well. Mm-hmm. What was it like being down there for you?
It was hellish. Very, very, very lonely. A very lonely, dark place. I kept saying, you know, I'm quite a visual person. I like to, you know, paint a picture when I'm trying to describe how I feel. And that to me was just, it was like looking up a big, big, long shaft, and there's this light at the top of it. But lots of people all chatting away to me and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I could have been in a room with all those people, but that's the way I felt, that they were there and I was way down here. I could hear them and everything, but I just couldn't connect at all. I was just totally alone in my head, you know, a very, very frightening place altogether.
Did you have friends in Scotland that you could talk to?
I did, but, you know, Barry, who wants to talk to you when you're in that kind of a mood? And I would be very independent, and I would have seen, I suppose, speaking to people, I would have seen at the time, you know, as being weak. I would have seen, you know.
How did you find the strength to leave the marriage?
I didn't. I didn't really. I left it hoping he'd come running after me. Okay. Would you believe, even after five affairs, I was hoping he'd say, oh my God, I've made a terrible mistake. I love you so much. But he didn't. Thanks be to God, he didn't. And I managed, and I think I cried every night for about 4 years. You know, it took me a long time, but I did an awful lot of work on myself after he had gone. Like, I mean, books, self-help books, going to psychologists, psychiatrists, just trying to figure out what my part in all this, you know, desperateness to have a man in my life was. Why was I like that?
Where did the analysis bring you to?
That I had no self-esteem, that I needed somebody else.
Because your father was always pulling you down.
Yeah, I suppose. I just needed somebody else.
Did you ever have a conversation with your father before he died? I
sent him a letter. I sent him a letter saying exactly what I thought. It wasn't a blaming letter, but it was a very... I told him how he made me feel as a child, how I felt like we weren't wanted children necessarily. We were just a byproduct of being married and, you know, you have kids and that's it.
Did he reply to it or saying no?
No, never.
So he went to his grave without even acknowledging it?
Yes, he did acknowledge it. He acknowledged it by saying to me, no. He introduced me to somebody maybe 3 years later and he said, oh, so-and-so, this is my daughter, Magella. She writes letters to me. And he winked at me and that was it. He never said another word and I knew that.
What did the wink mean?
He knew. I know.
Yeah. Is your mental health more challenged at Christmas when everyone's permanently happy?
Not because of that. Just having a lot of people around me, a lot of demands. Anytime I'm kind of overstressed or I'm tired, if I don't get enough sleep, then I can start to go down. But I'm very aware of it now, so it doesn't happen so much because I know myself, oh, you know, I need to take time out now or I need to go to bed early or whatever. So I'm so used to it that I can kind of have a handle on it.
And when you met Daniel for the first time, I remember you, what was it, 1999 in Tenerife?
Mm.
You had a few drinks, you were on the dance floor, he leaned in and what was that like? How did Daniel pull you?
How did he pull me? Well, we went to a pub in first and we were with some friends and and we were getting on grand and everything. Then we went to this club afterwards and I remember thinking, jeez, I can't imagine Daniel going to this club. It was a real, you know, boom, 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 bass kind of place.
You were raving. And, yeah. You weren't on ecstasy, the two of you then, no?
Just a bit, you know.
Okay.
But no, we went to this place anyway and we were dancing away and then the next thing he just kind of leaned over and kissed me.
Yeah.
And I thought, whoa. Whoa, we're going down the romantic route. We're not just friends. So, yeah, it was great.
But you told your sister, and what was her reaction?
She started laughing because she thought that I would have been more suited to Meatloaf than Daniel O'Donnell because she knew what kind of a gal I was, you know what I mean?
But you'd broken the pattern. You were drawn for once to a man who was capable of loving
man,
you and,
yes.
and you know reciprocated and yeah. for the right reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
How long did you before you put those pieces together?
Well, I suppose I would have started when I was 35, 36. So 5 or 6 years it took.
For you to be right to meet someone.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But thanks be to God, I don't need anybody in my life now. You know, unless I want them. I don't need them. I'm very happy being on my own too. You know, so that I was never like that before. I couldn't bear to be alone.
What's next for you?
Do you know, quiet time. I'm enjoying, I've done very little the last 2 months and I've been at home and I've really got the place sorted and I'm enjoying it. I'm considering doing a course in counselling.
What would you have said to yourself when you were going through all that at the start in Scotland and things were starting?
Oh, jeez, what would I have said to myself?
Go home.
Yeah.
Take the kids and go home.
Well, I did.
Yeah.
You know, I did. I was always running. That was always my, you know, I went from Thurles to London because it was, I was running after a guy. Then I split up with another guy in London. I wanted to run away, so I went to Scotland. And then I met my husband, and then I that all worked. And then I ran away to Tenerife, and then Daniel found me.
You live in Donegal. What's it like?
Barry, don't tell me you didn't see Room to Improve, the most watched TV programme in January with Dermot Bannon.
I didn't watch
it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous.
I was
now.
In your house in Tenerife with you and Daniel.
You were,
and
that's
it was,
right,
it
yeah.
was like something from Los Angeles. It's super trendy, super cool.
Yeah, no, it's lovely.
Do you still have that house?
We do, yeah. Going out now in January after Christmas for a month. Yeah. But yeah, Donegal is lovely. I mean, the house we had before was grand, but it didn't feel... I didn't love it. I just love the house the way it is now. It's more like Tenerife.
Yeah.
More that kind of, you know, it's quite very homely, but at the same time, it's bright and light and minimalist and love it.
And what do you and Daniel do for fun? Do you go to the movies, or apart from travelling around to B&Bs around Ireland?
Yeah, well, you see, we're actually very boring, the two of us. You know.
Do you still go raving and get off at each other on drugs?
No, we don't do that anymore. No. He plays cards.
Yeah.
In fact, when he comes home, we don't do anything together. The only time where I suppose we do things together is when we go on holidays, or you know we go cruising a lot because we love cruising. But like when he comes home, you don't really want to go out, because when you go out, A, you have to be done up. Because people are going to come up and want photographs and chat and blah, 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 which is grand. It's lovely, but you have to be in the mood for that. And I suppose when he's travelling all the time, when he wants to come home, all he wants to do is stay at home.
What do you fight about?
Ooh, what do we fight about? And we do. I suppose normal things. I mean, I just... you know, he annoys me sometimes and I annoy him. And
so what is the secret of your happy marriage?
Daniel, probably, because he will not take me on. Do you know what I mean? He's very good at kind of... He doesn't... If I say something, I would be the one, I suppose, that would starve, would get stroppy or whatever. Then he won't take me up on it, you know, or he'll just ignore what I said, or he'll do something funny that I'll... end up, you know, laughing, and then it's dispersed.
He knows how to defuse
exactly.
the bomb that
exactly.
can be Magella.
Exactly. I mean, it's. I suppose it's more irritation. Things like, you know, what do you want for your dinner? Anything. No, please tell me. I don't know what... No, anything at all. And then you go and get something, he'll say, oh, I would have preferred you got such and such. And I'll think, well, I asked you what you wanted. Stupid things like that, you know, just... nonsense stuff. But he's very easy to be with, and we're very comfortable together. Like, I mean, we were on a 4-month cruise 2 years ago. That's 4 months in a cabin.
It sounds like hell, to be honest.
Yeah,
no matter
it does,
who the person
but it was
is.
Fantastic.
So are there any big plans for next year?
Another cruise, 42 days.
Where would you go?
We're going from Singapore to Athens. But we go to, like, you know, Cambodia and Vietnam, Myanmar, across India, Dubai.
And will you get, when you're having dinner at night on the cruise, will you get romantic and serenade you?
Never. No, that's not romantic. That's my husband at work.
Okay. Brilliant. Speaking of serenading, do you want to serenade me out with She Moves Through the Fair?
Oh, geez, Barry, I haven't sang for so long. My young love said to me, my mother won't mind, and my father won't slight you for your lack of kind. And she went away from me, and this she did say, it will not be long, love, till our wedding day. And that's early in the morning.
Brilliant. Listen, Magella, Merry Christmas and thanks for coming in.
You're very welcome, Barry, and same to you.